Okay, thank you. Thank you, Remy. And thank you again to Florence for inviting us. I don't think this kind of talk, this kind of event could work in the UK. It would be too controversial for many, many reasons. So thank you, Florence, for having the event and for having us here. My interest in this came from a project I worked on with Florence, the Direl project. You can see the logo there, between 2008 and 2009. It was at this time that I also became interested in the work of Johan here, Johan's work on Malaysia. And part of this interest grew from...
Maybe it's a bit louder.
Okay. Part of this interest grew. At the time we were doing our project on the Direl project, our work on the Direl project, Malaysia was trying to develop a global halal standard. And this is where this paper comes from, really. It's about how Malaysia has developed what I'm calling a post-liberal halal strategy to target some of the developments we've heard about in these last couple of days, really. My starting point, really, again, I've pinched lots of slides from various places, online websites, etc. My starting point is the multiple halals, kind of multiple norms about halal that are in evidence across Europe today. And that's going to be the basis of my argument, as I've said. I'm going to talk about how Malaysia targets these multiple halals or attempts to target these multiple halals and to reposition themselves and reimagine a kind of role for themselves in the international arena. So as I've said, that's my starting point. I'm going to talk briefly about, Johan's covered a lot of the stuff already, I'm going to talk about briefly some of the history of ethnic diversity in Malaysia and how this has led to what I'm calling a post-liberal halal strategy. So there's a long historical legacy of ethnic diversity in Malaysia. From very early on in the state formation process, merchants from China, the Middle East, and Europe, they mixed openly with administrators and soldiers from colonial powers who were all jostling for power within the Malay Peninsula. During this process, slaves were traded openly in towns such as Singapore. And in the early 1800s, one of the first tasks of the first colonial administration was to try and rationalise these processes across economy and society, rationalise these processes of ethnic diversity that were occurring. So these processes, they came to the fore after Malaysia's independence from Britain in 1957 through what's been called an ethnocratic state regime. And throughout the coming period, the Malay state elite maintained hegemony by redefining the term, the state in their own terms, vis-a-vis the state's minority groups, as Johan's talked about, as Chinese and Indian minorities. And as part of this process, they introduced what have been called NEP, New Economic Policies, to produce an educated, an entrepreneurial, and a Malay consuming middle class, which would complement the emergence or the consolidation of a Western dominant economic model. And halal, as Johan has talked about in all his work, halal was central to this process through various social and economic spatializations, that's what we're calling them in this paper. And it's what Johan talks about in his work, really. So throughout this period, from the 1980s onwards, hegemony was maintained by the Malaysian state through the use of various means, through the use of ethnic quotas in education. I've read somewhere that over 90% of scholarships within this period were reserved for Malay students over and above Chinese and Indian minorities. The state also used a migration strategy to increase the population ratio of ethnic Malays vis-a-vis Chinese and Indian minorities. In 1957, 47% of the population was ethnic Chinese, and by 2009 this figure had dropped to 26%. As part of this process, what's been called, what Johan calls deviant Islam, was regulated. Some political activity was tolerated, but in general, Islamic political activity was tolerated, was banned to a great extent. So it was in this context that the state used halal to mobilise nationalism and notions of other. And debates about Islam were played out in the suburbs of Kuala Lumpur, again, as Johan said in his work, in spaces, social spaces between mosques and shopping malls, where debates about the role of Islam, the state and the market were debated. And it was in this context that eating was used to indicate the difference between halal consuming Malays and bad Malay, or the, what's been called by Johan and other people, the bad Malay other. Now, from about the late 1990s, as a result of the Asian economic crisis and wider global pressures, the state was, the Malaysian state was compelled to develop a less exclusive form of nationalism than they had done previously. And this was developed through what's been called Vision 2020. And it was launched to make Malaysia a fully modernised and developed country by the year 2020. And the halal has again been central to this process to a great extent through through new social and economic spatialisations, as we call them in our paper. This is underpinned to some extent by a discursive media and marketing strategy pursued by a whole range of state and private sector organisations, the HDC, as you can see in this paper, the Halal Development Corporation, the International Halal Integrity Alliance, and various other organisations, Halal Media being a kind of a more recent example, a kind of organisation that pursues or promotes Malaysia's strategy globally in the international arena. So this is the crux of our argument, really, at this point. And it's what I was talking about at the start when I worked on the Direl project with Florence. In 2004, Malaysia launched their own state halal food standard and certification regime. And this standard, which is called MS1500, it quickly gained recognition as markets expanded and the multiple halals emerged. So we're back to the multiple halals. It was in this context between 2008 and 2010 that Malaysia entered into a partnership with the OIC to develop a global halal standard. And during the Direl project, I should say the Direl project was just focused on Europe really, but we, at this time as these developments started occurring, some of our research team visited things like the World Halal Forum in Malaysia, various meetings, conferences, and observed the development, the emergence of this relationship between Malaysia and the OIC. And we came to the conclusion through various observations and ethnographic work that this partnership failed eventually because of Malaysia's sole intention to pursue their own economic agenda over and above the need or the desire to develop a global halal standard. So we're calling this a policy of selected openness. They pursued this policy, they entered the partnership solely as a way of promoting themselves more widely and drawing attention to their agenda in the international arena. They had no real intention of developing a global halal standard in this context. Well, that's the argument we make anyway. So this relates to post-liberalism, and what we're saying is under post-liberal conditions, Malaysia targets Muslim consumers that have been excluded under transnational conditions. And under post-liberal conditions, neither the centralised apparatus of government nor the relational networks of neoliberal governance are effective ways of organising economy and society. Much as transnationalism emerged as a response to the crisis at the heart of the nation state during the 1960s, we're arguing that post-liberalism is now emerging as a response to the crisis of multiculturalism at the heart of transnationalism. And evidence for this is evident in a number of online sources, websites of organisations. Halal Media, for example, they state that Malaysia now targets halal consumers as and when the opportunity arises, one country at a time. So that's their kind of the state in Malaysia's wider agenda. Now on this slide you can see how Malaysia is developing some kind of infrastructure, new supply chains, what have been called halal parks, halal hubs. While they're promoting this agenda, they're also developing simultaneously the kind of infrastructure on which it's based. A lot of these organisations are promoting links between ports in Malaysia, in Europe, Port of Rotterdam, for example. And in general, Malaysia's building relationships, different organisations in Malaysia, across the EU with private sector organisations, religious organisations, who target multiple groups of halal consumers. One organisation, Martri, which is the Malaysian trade agency, they've worked with Tesco, one of the major supermarkets in the UK, and a certification organisation called the National Halal Food Group. And the National Halal Food Group won an award from the Malaysian Chamber of Commerce for inserting or introducing halal products into the UK. And these developments are going on across Europe in different contexts to a greater or lesser extent. Okay, as Johan said, this is, for a long time, this was about halal meat in many respects, these debates. And stunning animals before slaughter was generally was the norm in across Europe for many years. For a number of years, Malaysia pursued the opposite path. They were against stunning. They didn't allow stunning and the slaughter of animals. But in 2010, they started to insert what we're calling new hegemonic claims into transnational space. Well, one of these developments was they started to allow the stunning of animals under certain conditions. So they allow stunning now for poultry and certain conditions. And during the Direl project, these issues came up in the work we did. A number of individuals who we interviewed talked about this. A manager of a specialist meat production company in the UK stated that the Malaysian state standard will continue to evolve as halal markets expand. And a Muslim scholar argued, more controversially, that the acceptance by stunning under certain conditions by Malaysia was an attempt to influence all Muslim consumers everywhere over and above all scholarly religious and scholarly opinion. So this is what we're calling the basis in this paper of post-liberalism. So under post-liberal conditions, the state splits itself into broader social aggregates. It participates by articulating interest, wills, and political views, and by linking with many different selected segments of social classes, social groups, associations of civil society, local business companies, etc., etc. And that's from a book published by a colleague who worked at Cardiff. So our argument here, to sum up our argument in the paper, is that these developments highlight a position or highlight the continuing role of the state under post-liberal conditions. And what we're arguing is these developments are not simply an example of the state acting in its own interests in response to wider global pressures, but they're kind of developing the spaces where there can be foundational transformations between the state, between public sector organisations and private sector organisations, as Johan's talked about some way, in particular spaces. So in conclusion, what we're saying is that a post-liberal halal strategy cuts across transnational space on the vertical plane, targeting different groups of Muslim consumers in different locations. And that's what we're calling Malaysia's post-liberal halal strategy. And we argue in the paper that this is part of a wider attempt or a wider strategy to reimagine Malaysia's role in the world. Okay, thank you.